Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, and we are diving into the NFC edition here. We did AFC yesterday, doing NFC in terms of looking at questions we asked over the offseason, and then answers that we've got now. So some interesting stuff here in terms of questions that I think are still answered. That are unanswered, and some that we're maybe in no way closer to answering whether good or bad than we were 6 months or so ago. So is Daniel Jones the answer for the Giants? Probably not. No progression in his 11 games, 6.6 yards per attempt to 6.7 yards per attempt, so minimal improvement there. He saw a drop in QBR for a second, performed slightly above average in terms of completion percentage against expectation. There still is some stuff about him being a decent deep ball thrower. They just threw it down the field not at all that frequently. They were like one of the lowest teams in terms of actually throwing deep balls. I think if you had a structure, and I don't think he's going to get this opportunity, but if there was a second opportunity that was sort of built around, hey, we're going to use the deep ball, we're going to sort of do that stuff with him, that's probably a place that he could, that would be what success would probably look like. I'm not sure he'd ever get there, but more vertical based shots than whatever really they've been doing. So it looks like they're going to get a new opportunity. The problem with this new opportunity is going to be new coaching staff, new front office, not a scholarship anymore. Entering year four, you're going to be declining, a fifth year option. And then you're playing, you're Mitchell Trubisky. And could Mitchell Trubisky land on his feet someplace? Maybe, but Mitchell Trubisky's been better than Daniel Jones so far. So, that's the problem that I would have with this. So, we'll see how this ultimately unfolds. But I'm pretty bearish on Daniel Jones, even though I had some optimism in the offseason. Like, hey, I think he could hang around, maybe be a quarterback two type guy. I just don't see. You're just not going to get a team that actually commits to developing him in that way. And, whether or not that's right or wrong, I just think that's probably the reality that we're in right now. So, Antonio Gibson, can he ascend to being elite? I mean, he jumps up, he finishes running back eight. It's a 1,000-yard rushing season. He jumps from 12.1 attempts per game to 16.1 attempts per game. He maintained the same 2.6 receptions per game as a rookie. He jumped up basically a yard in receiving yards per game from 17.6 to 18.4. That's just not going to cut it. And now you're seeing guys, like Josh Jacobs have bigger roles than him. And in terms of being pass catchers, which is pretty wild considering Gibson was a wide receiver in college. So I think he's maybe more in the Joe Mixon. And Joe Mixon might actually be a decent comp for him because Mixon similarly came in with a big receiving profile and then didn't really – has never really lived up to that, became much more of an aggregator. And that might be the avenue that Gibson takes. Again, if you are a starter for 17 games and a starter for that whole time and you play all 17 games, like, you're probably going to finish as a top 12 to 15 guy almost at worst. That's just going to be where you're going to finish. So Gibson gets in the top eight. Again, that's probably a little bit better than just aggregating. But it's not like on a per game basis, Jacobs was better, So when you look at some of these things, like, it's okay, like it's fine, but you wonder, is a truly difference making elite upside all the way there? And if people still think that it is that tradable? Would sort of be the other thing that I would say. Can the Dallas offense return to pre Dak Prescott injury? It's complicated would be the answer to that one. Dallas offense took a step forward. They led the league in passing yards. They were They led the league in total yards, second in yards per play, tied for second in passing yards, 4,800, ninth in terms of rushing yards, produced four starter seasons for Prescott, Zeke, CeeDee Lamb, and Dalton Schultz, with Pollard and Amari Cooper both just missing and performing in the next tier of players. What I would say is no elite finish. So good, like to very good across the board, but no elite finish, which gives me a little bit of, like you could have said, you know, you get a top six finish out of Zeke, like that's good, but I wouldn't call it necessarily elite. You know, but CeeDee Lamb is much more of a wide receiver two than he is a wide receiver one. Schultz finishes in the top six at the tight end position, but again, it's good. It's not necessarily great. It's very good, probably, but I wouldn't say that it's great. So it's interesting there that you sort of get all of that and you don't really get a true standout player out of this offense. There's just a lot there. Again, that's probably a floor supporting argument for Dak than anything. But I think it's interesting. Like, you look at this offense, it leads the league in total offense and doesn't really have an elite fantasy player on it, which is curious and odd. Is Jalen Hurts the future? Is the quarterback of the future in Philly? Quarterback 10 in season long and 10 in points per game. Led the league in rushing attempts with 140, rushing yards with 782, and rushing touchdowns with 10. That's all at the quarterback position. He's middle of the pack in terms of 7.3 yards per attempt and a near median 48.6 in terms of QBR. Listen, they've got multiple bullets to fire. They look like a team that could be in on Watson. And, you know, ultimately, like Jalen Hurts can be good, and, like, that's fine. There's a difference between good and great. You know, we were watching the game the other night. It was Derek Carr. And there was a throw that Derek Carr just overthrew in the end zone. It would have been a walk-off touchdown. And he just overthrew it. And so that's the difference between a good and a great quarterback. The great quarterback wins that game. Gets over. Like, Mahomes drops that in the bucket and it's over. Rodgers drops that in the bucket and it's over. You know, I don't know if Allen does, but you sort of get the idea. Like, the elites, it's just a different level. And, you know, with Hurts, is he there? Is this what a team wants to do in terms of rushing with him? I'll say this. I do think, and I think maybe this warrants, as we sort of look at this going forward, how do we treat super flex assets, like in the second round of rookie drafts, that sort of thing, like kind of like the NFL teams do? Well, we'll take a, like, at the right price, take a shot. And, you know, if that's second round rookie pick, something like that, like I had a couple of shares of Kellen Mond that's just, I mean, okay, like if he succeeds, like there's a chance that he is something. You know, he was basically the one that I didn't really do it with, and ultimately the answer was probably Davis Mills. But you know, Hurts is a prior iteration of that. And I think with Hurts, it makes a lot of sense. Like, they make it to the playoffs. There's no rush to potentially try and replace him. Like, they're in a situation where they're fine, kind of like Houston is. They're like, okay, like, we can do this again. And I think Hurts is better than Mills, but you sort of get the idea. Like, there's no, you're not forced to, and you make the decision later. Like, I think that's fine. You know, we'll see. The problem that I would have with it this year is you're gonna have three first-round picks. I'm not sure there's an elite asset in this rookie draft, but that would be how you would probably get them. So maybe they trade down, you know, get some future assets, something like that. And we have this hanging over Jalen Hurts' head again. But if they want to fully commit to him, they have the assets to make a difference, right? They have the assets to add, you know, I don't know if it's another wide receiver or some line help, you know, or whatever, right? They have the ability and assets to potentially continue to add skill position guys or offensive core guys, multiple of them, to potentially help out Hurts. So really interested how that's going to go long term. What's the wide receiver future in Houston? Allen Robinson, disappointment. Wide receiver 84 in season-long points. By far the worst outside of his injury-shortened 2017 season. Darnell Mooney actually finished wide receiver 23 in 2021, giving them a potential in-house replacement. You know, in the event that Robinson leaves, I think it's expected that he's going to leave in free agency. So that'll be a story we're going to watch here over the next you know, over the next few weeks here, a few months, is Allen Robinson's future, and then what they're going to do with trying to replace Robinson's role there in the Chicago offense. And honestly, in terms of replacement, like, there's not a ton of there's not a ton that they have to replace, honestly, with how he played this year. So with Allen Robinson, I think it's going to be an interesting, I need to, other than the wide receiver show, and we'll need to do that, but I would be like, he's going to be pretty far down the position, just because I think even if you sort of look at it, like, there's a lot of guys. I mean, like, Brandon Cooks was in the 40s last year, and like, you feel a lot better about Brandon Cooks than you do Allen Robinson right now. And if they're going to be near each other again, I wouldn't expect Brandon Cooks' cost to go up. Allen Robinson should be later than him, and if he's not, that's crazy. You know, so you sort of start doing the math, and it's like, okay, buy low on Allen Robinson, but is it really going to be a buy low? Or is it going to be some sort of middle that you're going to be buying, and it's actually not a low? So just be careful on that. It sounds good in theory, but I'm not sure it's actually going to work out in total practice. How will DeAndre Swift progress was a question in Detroit. Yeah. He second in the team in carries, a couple behind Jamal Williams. Both of those in 13 games, you could say, like, you could pitch me and say, hey, DeAndre Swift didn't really play 13 games. He played 12. And then he, on a per-game basis, got him. That's one way to read it. I tend to be a little bit conservative in terms of making those types of judgments. In terms of, just I don't like to go over my skis in terms of, oh, yeah, like, this situation is absolutely, it was just, we could just discount this, discount that, because then all of a sudden we're discounting everything, and like, that's not the way you want to go either. So, but Swift, top five dynasty running back, I think at this point, 62 receptions, fourth best mark. Again, that is in only 13 games, so that's a really good number there. I think he's more of a receiving guy. He performs a little bit under expectation in terms of rushing. He's a receiving-centric guy that can do both. But that's probably what you want. You probably want him to be a receiving-centric guy. But I think you have to keep in mind that he's going to be probably in a committee. And the fact that they invested in Jamal Williams isn't surprising, given how they used him. So that would sort of be my angle on how I would think about DeAndre Swift going forward. He's probably worth the top five cost, but there is a difference between him and Taylor. There's a difference between him and McCaffrey, probably. There's a difference between him and Harris, would be what I would say. Like, when you look at the actual usage, like, they're all good. They think there's different investment profiles up there, too, in terms of the risks you're willing to take. But when you sort of look at it, I think in an absolute mega, hit, who has the highest outcome? It's probably not Swift, because I think he's getting sideswiped enough by Jamal Williams, where he's he doesn't probably have that ultimate running back one upside. All right, next up is Aaron Rodgers. What will happen with him? Well, he came back and played at an MVP level. I'd probably vote Brady, but he played at an MVP level. He's probably going to win it. And top eight, played on a broken toe. There's a lot of flexibility this year in terms of what they're going to do. I mean, listen, like, you look around that division, and he's got it more figured out than I do, I'm sure. But you've got Chicago firing, doing a total reset, Minnesota doing a total reset. Detroit is in the midst of a total reset. It's really easy to host multiple playoff games coming from that division right now with their team. So we'll see. It's really interesting there. Is Kellen Mond a consideration for Minnesota's future franchise quarterback? I think no would sort of be my thought. I talked about this earlier in the last podcast. Like, we look at the statements, right? It was from Kellen Mond. It's, hey, we're not or from Mike Zimmer, it's like, hey, I don't need to see him in games. I see him every day. And you're like, oh, okay. Like, that's not great. Like, that sounds like something, like Al Bundy would say about his wife, right? Like, that's not a ringing endorsement of Kellen Mond. So, not great. We'll see what the future looks like. But I am not investing a ton in the idea that he's going to be a future starter. How will the Atlanta offense look under new head coach Arthur Smith? Talk about a crummy hand. They trade Julio, Calvin Ridley basically takes the season off, you know, or basically half the season off for personal reasons, and Smith ends up, you know, riding Russell Gage and Kyle Pitts, and then it becomes Cordarrelle Patterson has a historic breakout, has a breakout season, first coach to really get what could be gotten out of him. So really interesting there in terms of how Arthur Smith was able to deploy his team. So good for him. I think it's a good start, you know, and they've got some work to do. Their ownership has been patient long term, right? And they've been willing to long-term build. They're probably going to need that, right? They overperformed. It's one of the worst, the worst DVOA for a team with whatever 7 or 8 wins or how many they had, historically bad, historically overperformed record-wise versus what their true fundamentals would be. So you say, okay, the problem with that is now if you regress, to your mean, you're going through a rebuild, you're going in the wrong direction, it looks like. So just that's always a cause for concern with some of these guys in terms of what their arc is. So that would be one thing that I would pump the brakes on a little bit for Arthur Smith, because I think even if they're sort of trending up directionally, even if they're improving, they could be worse next year. And I think that would be even if they're improving off of this year's team, I think it's more likely than not that they're worse next year. So that would be the thing that I would just be a little cautious about. Will Sam Darnold ascend to a franchise quarterback? The answer to the question is no. It's the third lowest QBR amongst qualifiers. Only Zach Wilson, Justin Fields are worse. He saw a drop in yards per attempt from 6.6 when he was in New York to 6.2. I mean, the answer to the question is no. So that's all we really need to know there. Who will be the successor to Drew Brees? I don't know if we have a true answer to that yet. And we'll see. Jameis looked good to begin. Then obviously gets hurt. Now we've got Taysom Hill, Trevor Siemian, Ian Book starts a game. I think there's a lot of thought that, hey, this could be a landing spot for a Russell Wilson, for example, or a Deshaun Watson. Not sure how they make that work. I'm not sure how they make any of their salary cap stuff work. But I think it'd be a really interesting landing spot for one of those guys, for sure. So we'll see. I'm really interested in how that's all going to how that situation is going to unfold. I suspect that no one on their roster right now is the answer at quarterback. That would sort of be my hunch, and that it's, maybe it's the 2022 answer at quarterback, but probably not the full franchise commitment player. Is a guy like Mayfield on a second deal, something like that? That would be interesting too. So that would be one that I'd watch for. Who's the starting running back in Tampa? This is one that was confusing to me. They brought in Giovanni Bernard. We got the limited sample of playoff Lenny, but we didn't necessarily know in a full season. It was hard to sell Lenny. We had a lot of Lenny. It's hard to sell him, but we didn't really know. We said, hey, listen, if one guy is the answer, it's probably him. And it turns out to be him. He's a top 3 performer when he was in the lineup. So really good on him. He enters free agency. People are taking Rashad Penny over him. I bet you if you polled people right now and they were say, hey, what's your take? Was Leonard Fournette a good or a bad rookie pick? I bet you the majority of people would say a bad rookie pick. He's a historically good rookie pick. It's just amazing when we sort of contextualize these results, how good of a performer he's been in the first 5 years now of his career. I think 5 or 6 years now of his career. So really good production there, and we'll see what he does in free agency here. Obviously have him down the stretch, and maybe it's another commitment, and maybe they run it back to some degree. I think there will be changes in the Tampa offense, but maybe they run it back with Leonard Fournette as being the guy next year for one last ride for Brady. All right, is Kyler Murray an elite passer? Well, he took a jump, and he did take a jump. So you look at his PFF grade, he's the best deep ball PFF thrower. So I think like that's, you sort of look at that. And I think ultimately, and I talk about this, and I've recorded the QB tiers for his tier. I have a little bit of concern about, you know, I want to sort of see it for a full season, and I want to see him, you know, be able to sustain through a full season. I'm not going to say he's injury prone, but I do want to see him be able to take care of himself. So, I mean, I talked about that more in depth in that show, so you can check that out. But I do think, you know, when it comes out, it'll probably be the next few days or so. I do think that he's probably trending in the right direction. There's a group of guys. He's not in an elite tier yet just because he doesn't have the longevity, and I'm not fully committed to him being an elite passer. But I do think that he's heading in the right direction. That probably means I'm not going to pay for him at cost, would sort of be my hunch in the offseason. How will Matthew Stafford transform the Rams offense? And this is a big question. We saw it pay off with Cooper Kupp. It didn't really pay off with many others. It didn't pay off with Higbee to really a difference-making level. Robert Woods was on track for being a wide receiver too when he was healthy, and then he missed the rest of the season there. You know, Stafford's a top six guy, depending on your format. So I think it's a good performance there. I think some of the advanced metrics on that, you could say, all right, maybe there's not necessarily all of that. I think that's probably a more specific Ram show that we'll do. We'll talk about some of that stuff. But, you know, is Stafford perfect? No, he's basically exactly who he was in Detroit for the past, like, 6 years. He performed in a very narrow band of production, and that's basically who he was this year. So, which offense will Seattle showcase in 2021? It was all over the place, really. It ends up being Penny at the end. You know, Russ comes on. I think Russ actually performs at a good level late in the season when it's, you know, on a positive arc to end. So we'll see. I think there's a lot of questions with this offense. You know, what does it look like in 2022 is probably one of the bigger questions. Doesn't look like there's any Pete Carroll on the way out movement yet. You know, this is still early, I guess, in the process. But yeah, I mean, it looks, you know, we'll see sort of what this is ultimately, you know, in their franchise arc. I think this is going to be a big story for the offseason. And what is the pecking order for San Francisco's running backs? We didn't know. We thought maybe Sermon. We thought, you know, Mostert, and then Mostert got hurt. Gallman wasn't a factor. We thought Sermon would be up. It was actually Elijah Mitchell, and then it was Jeff Wilson. And so good there in terms of, you know, if you took Elijah Mitchell, I think, you know, that's going to be definitely one we have to rethink in terms of our process. I've talked about that a little bit. I'll continue to talk about that because I think it's an instructive way about how we go about evaluating some of these situations. So, but yeah, so that'll pretty much do it for this episode. Again, I like to go back and look at these questions that we had and revisit them, see if we can figure out some ways to improve our process. So yeah, hope you enjoyed this podcast. And until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.